Let's do it. Welcome to the NorCal Real Estate Show, where we're talking all things real estate in YOLO, Sacramento, and Solano counties. My name is Jeremy Higgins. I'm the team lead of the Higgins team at eXp Realty, and I am here with my partner,
Andrew Loyevsky.
Andrew, what's going on, my brother?
Chilling.
All right, folks, we were going to bring you an interview with the incredible Nate Pena of Fairway Mortgage today, but as we are recording this, many of you are aware that the Calder Fire, as well as others, are ravaging through our state right now. And the Calder Fire alone has claimed 471 homes already. It's been absolutely devastating. South Lake Tahoe was recently evacuated yesterday. And our wonderful Nate was gracious enough to take in several families from that that area, and therefore he could not make it. So anyway, we want to just let you all know that our hearts are with you, and we just hope that you get through this quickly and safely.
Thank you, Nate.
All right, so today we are going to talk about buying a house when you need to sell a house. The market's been super competitive over the last year. How many times have we talked about that? So it's been tough. Like, how do you buy a house if you need to sell a house? But if you sell your house, where are you going to live before you buy a house? So we're going to talk about all that. But before we do that, we're going to jump into our quick tip of the day. What do we have, Mr. Andrew Loyevsky?
Tip of the day. Don't forget to reach out to a tax professional before you buy or sell.
No doubt.
Whenever you purchase a home, you're going to be asked to identify how you're going to hold title, whether you're a single person, you're married, corporation, whatever it might be. And there are numerous ways to hold title, and it's important for you to understand the tax consequences or benefits for each one that you choose. As a homeowner, you got to realize that your home is an investment, and therefore, the great country of the United States, we have the IRS. And specifically, we're in California. They're going to want a piece of the pie too, right? We have some of the highest taxes in the country. And it's important to know what those taxes are before you make one of the biggest decisions of your life.
Yeah. I mean, that tax that you're talking about, everyone should know about it, capital gains tax. But yeah, we do get taxed on investments, and our homes are considered investments. And therefore, the IRS, as well as the state franchise tax board in the state of California, they will tax that. I think we're at somewhere around 24% federal tax, and about 13.3% potentially for the state tax. So that can equate to a lot of money. That's what capital gains is. But there is some good news. There is a silver lining around that. And the good news is regarding the exemptions that you may be eligible for.
So what is capital gains tax specifically? What is capital gains?
Capital gains is going to be the tax that the IRS and state tax franchise is going to take out of any proceeds that you make. So basically the difference between what you purchase your home versus the sales price that you sell it for, whatever those proceeds are in between, that's what you're going to get taxed on. So there are exemptions, like we mentioned, $250,000 if you're a single person. So if you purchased a home on your own and nobody else with you on title, when you sell it, you'll be exempt from paying taxes on at least $250,000 of your gain. For a long time, we were like, dude, you're never going to get that. But now,
it's coming into play more and more often.
100%.
So example of this, you bought a house for 500 grand as a single guy, you go and you sell it for 750, you're going to have 250 grand in appreciation there, right? So in this case, you're going to have no tax liability on that because you get that 250 grand tax exemption.
If you're married, you get an exemption up to 500,000. So I'll give you another example. So you buy a house with a spouse. You purchase it for $500,000. 10 years later, you sell it for $1.1 million. Seems crazy, but it is reality right now. And so therefore, you would have made a $600,000 profit in that.
Right? So imagine paying 30-something percent tax on 600 grand.
Well, actually, you would be exempt from 500,000 of that 600, so you wouldn't have to pay any taxes on that. You would be paying taxes only on the $100,000 that's above that exemption. So why are we telling you this? Because there are folks out there who, you know, oftentimes you purchase your first house, it's oftentimes it's a smaller home, maybe not in the exact location that you want. And so, you know, a couple years down your life, you're building a family, whatever you're doing, you're expanding, you want bigger space, you want a better location, whatever the case might be. So you want to go out and purchase a house. But financially, you're able to purchase the new house without selling the house. So your original house. So you may choose to keep that. Before you do that, I think it's really important that you reach out to a tax professional, because there are some bad news.
Newses.
There is some bad news about capital gains as it relates to real estate as well. You are not eligible for those exemptions if this house was not your principal residence.
So if you use it as a rental.
If you use it as a rental, you did not live in it during your ownership, it is not considered a principal residence, and therefore you are not exempt from paying taxes. If you own the property for less than 2 years, then you're not exempt. 2 years out of a 5-year period. So you own the house and you live in it for less than 2 years out of a 5-year measuring period just prior to the sale, you will not be exempt. That's the key one that I want to key in on. If you choose to keep your original house that you do have a tax exemption on, you go and you purchase the new house, and then you continue the ownership of the original house for more than 3 years, then at that point you will no longer qualify, because you won't comply with that living in the home for 2 of 5 years. So let's assume that you have at least $500,000 in equity that has built up in that original home with you and your spouse. That could cost you a fancy $180,000.
It's a lot of money
if you don't plan that appropriately.
Yeah. So I think you got to understand, you know, what your tax implications are, and you need to decide, you know, are we going to take advantage of this tax exemption, go ahead and sell now, move on to the next property? Or you have to make the decision like, hey, we're going to keep this property as an investment. We're going to keep it long term, and we're going to make that money back with our appreciation and our rent that we're going to collect.
Correct. And look, we're not financial advisors. We're not tax professionals. So we're not really qualified to give you the exact tax code as it relates to this. There could potentially be some workarounds, but again, these are things that need to be planned in advance and with a tax professional. So at the end of the day, the quick tip of the day is contact your tax professional before you buy or sell a home. There's a lot of money involved here, and we don't want to see you miss out on it.
Bingo.
Anything else you got on that topic, mister?
Yeah, later in another episode, we'll talk about how to, what's called the 1031 exchange, how to defer those taxes. If it's an investment property, we can get into that later. There's some workarounds.
That's a fun one. That's a popular one. Mm-hmm. That can save you a ton of money there too. All right, so on to the main topic of the day, buying a house when you need to sell a house. So houses are kind of expensive today, aren't they?
A little bit.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's not a ton of people out there that just have the ability to keep their original house and then just go out there and purchase another $1 million house. Many of them do need to sell their original house so they can get the proceeds from that house and use those proceeds to purchase the new house, right? Makes sense?
Yeah. So we've been talking about this week after week. The market's high. Things are expensive. And a lot of people can't afford to purchase another house without selling the house they're currently in, right? I mean, there's a lot of money floating around here. So the first thing we need to do is talk to your lender and see what you can afford without selling your house and what you can afford with selling your house. And you need to figure out if, you know, those budgets that they give you will get you the house that you want.
Yeah, I mean, that plays a big role, because it all comes down to strategy, right? And we have to balance out strategy and capabilities and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, if you cannot afford to purchase a house, comfortably purchase a house without selling, then that kind of takes away one of your strategies. But I'll tell you that from a negotiation standpoint, especially in a market like this where it's so competitive, by the way, we are still in a seller's market. I know that a lot of people are freaking out that we are that we're slowing down, the market is slowing down. It is slowing down from a seasonal basis for sure. But statistically, over 50% of homes on the market are still selling with multiple offers at this point. So it's still a very active market. And it's a tough negotiation. If you're a buyer trying to purchase the dream home that you have, and you're telling that seller, oh, by the way, the only way I'm going to be able to buy this is if I'm lucky enough to get my house sold. And 50% of the houses on the market today are selling with multiple offers, which means 50% are not. So 50% of the homes are not necessarily selling right out of the gate. So that is that's a little bit of a risk for that new seller, right? Do they want to accept your offer, knowing that the only way that you're going to be able to fulfill the contract and buy that house is if you're lucky enough to sell your house? Now, if you use us, not a problem, but that's a side note. That is reality. It's a very tough negotiation. So if there's any way that you can purchase your home without selling, by all means, it's a great strategy to use. But that does come with some risk too, doesn't it?
It does. So we've been with pretty limited inventory over the last year or so. So the biggest concern, I think, for sellers this year has been, hey, if I sell my home, where's my next home going to be? Am I going to be able to find it? Am I going to have to rent after I sell?
Yeah. I mean, we've had stories after stories of people that have been writing offers 15, 20 houses, and they haven't been able to find that house. So it has been a little bit risky for these sellers. And that, I mean, that absolutely contributed to our lack of inventory. I can't tell you how many sellers that we had, or I guess potential sellers that we had that were interested in making a move, but they were like, hey, Jeremy, Andrew, like, I don't know if the house that I want is out there or if it's available.
There's too much uncertainty for them.
Totally. Yeah. Like, you don't want to be homeless.
Definitely not. And even finding the backup plan is always, oh, we'll just find a rental that we can jump into for a while till we find that perfect home. And even rentals now are, you know, tough to come by. So people have really, it's caused a lot of stress, and a lot of people have just called it quits. Hey, we're going to put our selling, you know, on hold.
Yeah. If you don't feel secure about where you're going to be able to go, that that does certainly make it difficult to you know, get the ball rolling on the sales side. But we do have a little bit of an answer for that. So I think many of you have heard of the contingency as it relates to the purchase of the home, right? So you go write an offer on a house and you make it contingent upon you being able to sell your home. That's what we were just talking about. Not the best strategy as it relates to negotiations with the seller, but hey, it always comes down to price or terms. Mm-hmm. So if you want to have very favorable terms,
you're going to have to pay a little bit.
You're going to have to pay some money for it. If you go and you pay $20,000, $30,000 more than the next highest offer, that seller may choose to take your offer. So we're not saying it can't be done. I mean, it happens all the time. We're negotiating one right now. I think they have two houses that they need to sell.
Yeah, not a fun situation. We'll touch base real quick on it, but it's not a fun situation for our seller. We have this buyer coming in that says, hey, we really love your house, but for me to be able to finance and afford your house and get a loan for it, I need to sell two of my other properties to get this to happen. Has to sell both, which means, you know, both those properties, those buyers need to be able to perform and follow through and get qualified for their loan. And if one of those two buyers doesn't, you know, come through, then he can't purchase our home. Yeah. And this could be a whole string of events over the course of 2 or 3 months if things get delayed. And at the end of the day, our sale might not go through.
So I think we've been kind of lucky in some ways over the last couple of years where we haven't really had to work and negotiate through contingencies very mm-hmm. often, because the market's been so strong that sellers just haven't had to even entertain offers that are contingent, right? They're like, well, I'm just going to go with this cash offer. Or I'm going to go with this other offer that doesn't have a contingency and they're waiving appraisals, whatnot. But curious, how many contingencies have you had in one deal in your career? Meaning like this house is contingent upon that house, which is contingent upon that house selling, which is contingent upon that house.
The most I had was three.
That's a rookie answer. Seven. For me.
No,
I kid you not. I kid you not. I kid you not. The house was, my clients were purchasing a house in Davis, and it was, they were purchasing that contingent upon the sale of their home in Dixon, which was contingent upon another house selling seven deep.
And that is quite a stack of dominoes.
Well, it was a different market. I promise you, we wouldn't be doing it in a market like this for sure. But that was a different market, and it happened, man. We got it done. I think we closed like 2 or 3 days late, you know, because like, you know, one deal closes a little late, which causes the next deal to close late. I think it was two or three. I wish I could say that it was all me, but it was actually not. because I was at the end. I was at the, you know, I was at the very end. So,
where was your stress level through this whole time? Is this why you have gray hair now?
I don't stress, bro.
Seven deep and you were
16 years doing this. I don't stress.
So wow. Here's the other question that I was thinking of. What about your end of the line seller? What was their stress level on this?
Fortunately, it wasn't my seller, so I didn't have to deal with it.
Oh my God.
But it would have been stressful for sure.
Right? Just waiting for everything to fall into place. It's this weird, like the game of Mousetrap where everything has to fall just so, or else it doesn't work. I can't even imagine what that's like to be in that sort of limbo.
And what if you're the buyer that ends up not performing at like the very beginning of the chain, right? Everyone's going to hate you.
You want to go hide and like hide yourself because you might find buried.
Change your number or something.
Voodoo dolls, real estate voodoo.
Oh man.
So I don't know how we got sidetracked, but I thought that was interesting. It was a fun transaction and actually it wasn't fun, but you know what I'm saying?
Well, it just goes to show it's all part of the real estate game, right? Like when it comes to affordability, you have to sell something to buy something and, you know, millions of people are in the same position as you. And in this particular case, the stars aligned and there was a line of seven people.
Yeah. I just think that, you know, in many ways, we've been spoiled. I mean, this has been a tremendously difficult market to work in over the last couple of years, no doubt about it. But it's just been different. Right. So different markets bring different challenges. And so we have been spoiled in this respect that we haven't had to really work through contingencies. With that being said, they're coming back and they're coming back now. I mean, we're seeing contingencies pop up on a regular basis at this point.
And why is that?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with now that the market slowed a little bit, inventory hasn't increased a ton, but the fact that people are not seeing 15 offers. I feel like the sellers are now becoming a little bit more confident that maybe they can make a move now. And so we're seeing some of these sellers that have been staying put for the last year, just thinking that they would never find a house. Mm-hmm. They're deciding to jump into the market at this point. So I do think it's something that we're going to see more of. And when you're not getting 10 or 15 offers and your house isn't selling in 2 hours and you really have one offer that's being presented to you, you really have no choice at that point, but to, you know, potentially consider.
Right. And I think, you know, we're late in the summer, buyer demand is dropping a little bit, inventory's up a tad little bit. And, these sellers, a lot of buyers have just been burnt out and they've kind of dropped out of the market. And these FHA offers and these contingent buyers that need to sell, this is their opportunity to squeak in there and, they've stuck it out all summer, whatever the case might be. And this is their chance to, you know, potentially get that deal because they're not competing with 15 other ready, eager buyers.
Yeah. So, I mean, we kind of got a little bit sidetracked, but I actually, now that we're here, I think it's an important thing to talk about. And that is, you know, from a seller standpoint, when you're receiving these offers that are contingent, I mean, do you automatically just cringe and say, there's no way that I want to accept it? I mean, I don't think so.
No, not the case, but in our example right now, we did receive that contingent offer. And we didn't jump on it right away, right? We're kind of dragging our feet, hopefully get a couple more showings and hopefully we get something else. But in this case that, you know, that didn't happen. And now we're having to do our homework and do a little bit of research on these other deals to make sure that they are going to go
right
through.
There. I think that's the key. That's where I was going. Like you don't just jump on and accept it. I think there needs to be some homework that needs to be done, some research. I think it's important to learn everything that you can learn about the houses that this is contingent upon. You know, if you see a house that's worth $500,000 and it's listed on, you know, for $600,000, then, you know, I think you tell them to pound sand. Like, you're not going to take that. Mm-hmm. But if you see a $500,000 house and they're like, hey, we're motivated. We listed it at $465,000 because we just want to get it done. We love this house. I think in that situation, you jump on it.
Well, that's part of our due diligence right now. At least that's what I did most of this morning, right, for a couple hours was I had to vet this buyer and talk to the agents, more than one agent that's selling multiple properties, and check in with them, make sure that the terms are good, that the buyer is committed, have they removed contingencies on that sale, call this buyer's lender to make sure that they're well qualified and make sure that, you know, everyone's ducks are in a row and that this is going to go through smoothly.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're probably just this kind of mind numbing type stuff that we're talking about. We get it. I guess the bottom line is that I think we're at a place where you're likely going to have to start, if you're a seller, you're going to have to likely start considering contingent offers. They're not the worst in the world. I just told you we got through 7. Andrew got through 3. So they can happen, but there is some due diligence that needs to happen. But let's get back to the main topic. And it was the main topic was, how do you sell a house and buy a house? And so we've kind of talked a little bit about it. You got the contingency. So we've all heard about the contingency on the purchase, contingent upon the sale. But what we don't hear a lot of, and which is something that we use a ton, is the contingency on the sale of your property, mm-hmm. right? So we've talked about how a lot of these sellers have chosen not to move at all because they're fearful that they're not going to be able to find a suitable home that they want to move into. That makes sense. Nobody wants to do that. Nobody, and many people don't want to go and rent either, by the way. I mean, that's a pain in the butt to pack all your stuff up, move into a rental, move out of the rental, you know.
And it's a waste of money.
So it's all about where the leverage lies in the market. And we just happen to be in a market that is absolutely still a seller's market. The sellers have the leverage right now. So why not put the contingency on the side that you have the most leverage on? You don't have a lot of leverage right now when you're purchasing houses. You're potentially competing with other people and your contingency doesn't look so hot. But from a seller's angle, because we are in a strong seller's market now and we're still getting multiple offers, a lot of these buyers are willing to take that risk, meaning they're going to go ahead and get into contract with you, and they're going to they're just going to keep their fingers crossed that you are able to sell your home. But the cool thing about the contingency is that if for some reason you do not find that house that is your dream house, that house that is 100% suitable, it's in the location that you want, then you're never obligated to sell your house if you have this contingency in place. So that's really the strategy that we tend to prefer the most. When we are consulting with our clients and we're deciding whether or not they want to put the contingency on the purchase or the contingency on the sale, I think we tend to lean towards the contingency on the sale because, again, that's where we have the leverage. So some folks just say, no way. I don't even want to jump through those hoops unless I know that I have a house. And those are the folks that oftentimes just never make that move.
Yeah, I'm dealing with one right now where we've given the seller 30 days to find a replacement property. So we found ourselves a buyer to purchase her home. They've been super flexible. They've been, you know, extra willing to try and do everything possible to make the sale go through. But at the end of the day, the seller needs to find her replacement home before she can sell. And so we've given the seller 30 days. If the seller doesn't find a replacement property within 30 days, then the buyers have the right to back out and move on to the next home.
Yeah, which, I mean, obviously we hope doesn't happen. So there is another option. So let's recap. So there's the option of putting the contingency on the purchase. We talked about how that's not so hot. Now we talked about putting the contingency on the sale side, meaning you get your house listed first, put it on the market, find the buyer, accept their offer contingent upon you purchasing a house. Once you have all of that in play, now you can go into the purchase market and you can go to those sellers and say, hey, my house is already in escrow. I've already got a buyer. They've already removed their contingencies. It's a solid deal. Mm-hmm. That seller is going to be much more likely to entertain your offer if they know that your house is secure, much different than if your house wasn't even listed yet and the seller doesn't have any information. So those are your two options so far. Your third option, which is a little bit more risky, would be to go ahead and list your home first. This is actually our favorite because it's the easiest. List your house first, find your buyer, get into contract, and close escrow with a negotiation caveat of a rent back up to 60 days. So if the buyer that's purchasing your house is using a loan, you can actually rent that house back for up to 60 days. So you get into, you find your buyer, you get into contract, and you close escrow, and at that point you can go and shop for your new home, and you have about 3 to 4 weeks at that point to find the home that you like and get into contract, and then you have another 21 to 30 days to close escrow on it. Works super smooth. So some folks don't want to do it. They think it's too risky. What if I don't find a house, in the next 30 days, and what do I do? Because I mean, technically at that point, you do have to be out at the end of 60 days.
There's some risk involved with every option that you choose here, right? But this is a pretty low risk option because you're giving yourself an additional 60 days to locate a replacement property. And we're pretty confident that you're going to be able to find something that's going to be adequate.
Yeah. I mean, we said it last week. Like, I think the stars have aligned, folks. Like, now is the time to do it. It's we found this sweet spot where there's still enough buyer activity. It's still strong enough buyer activity that you don't really have to worry about getting your home sold, but it's not so competitive that you're not going to be able to find a house. I mean, there are homes coming on the market every day. And it's not that difficult to get your offer accepted. You're not having to go 10, 15% over anymore. You're not having to put these crazy terms and all that kind of stuff. So it, I think we really have found that sweet spot. I mean, would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. Buyer demand is down a little bit. So things are just a little bit slower. And that's giving you a little bit more wiggle room to be more flexible on your terms. And like I said, 60 days doesn't sound like a long time, but when you're on, you know, your home search and you're looking every day, we can pull something together for you pretty easily.
Yep. And I don't know, did we chat about them just going ahead and purchasing the second home without selling and then selling their original home after they close escrow on the first?
I don't think we touched on that, but one option is to go ahead and if you can afford it, that comes down to affordability, right? If your lender says, hey, you know, you can afford the dream home that you want to move into without selling your the home you're in now, you can go and purchase that home, right? That's easy peasy, no problem. Then you can go back and sell your current home and there's no issues there. The only risk involved there is if your first home doesn't sell as quickly as you would like, now you're stuck potentially paying two mortgages for, you know, 2 or 3 months until your first home sells.
Again, probably a smaller risk because houses are selling pretty quickly. And really at the end of the day, you as a seller have quite a bit of control on whether or not your home sells. Right? Yeah. If you have a $500,000 house and you want to push the limits and list it for $540,000, then I think there's a good chance your house is probably going to sit for a while and you're not going to sell it right away. And you're going to end up bringing the price down until it hits the point that a buyer is willing to buy. But if you have a $500,000 house and you choose to list it for $495,000, that house is going to sell. I mean, that's just the market that we're in. That house is going to sell. So you have a lot of control. You don't have to be in a position where you end up, you know, with multiple mortgage payments. If you want to push the limits and try to squeak every little penny out, then, you know, maybe you do increase your risk. But if you're reasonable with it, you price it correctly. We're not saying underprice it. We're just saying price it correctly. Your house is going to sell. I don't think the risk is that great.
Yeah, I think this is all market conditions dependent, right? Right now we have a great seller's market. So if you price your home correctly, you know it's going to sell. And we can get it done for you.
If you've learned anything today, it is that real estate can be very complex. And not every or every deal is different. And it's important to speak with a professional who can interview you and consult with you, determine what your desires are, what your needs are, you know, the risks that you're going to, you know, be willing to take or not take and all that kind of stuff. There's just a multitude of ways that you can get this done. But it's just not that simple to just say, I'm just going to do it. You got to meet with somebody, you got to talk to them for a while. So, that's our advice to you. Speak to a tax professional and figure out how you're going to hold title in a house and make sure that you're not going to be paying up the wazoo for taxes. And then contact your real estate agent ahead of time. Like, give yourself plenty of time so you can strategize and create a plan to make this smooth. Because at the end of the day, it does not have to be difficult. It does not have to be complicated and it does not have to be stressful. If you plan ahead and you create the process that you're going to follow, it's a pretty simple process.
Yeah, you can't call us too early in advance either. We can lay out an entire roadmap for you and give you guidance on what to do. But if you get to us last minute, sometimes your options can be really limited. So talk to your tax guy, figure out what you can afford, what it's going to cost you to sell. Talk to your lender, see what you can afford if you sell, what you can afford if you don't sell, and then give us a call.
That's it. Anything else?
I think we're good.
So next week, keep our fingers crossed that the fires will die down and be in a bit more control. And we'll have Nate Pena here. We're going to talk all things lending. I think that's going to be a very interesting one because that's also a very complex deal. But I'm confident that he's going to be able to break it down in a manner that we're all able to understand and give you some more confidence moving forward. Thanks for being with us. See you on the next one.
See ya.